Sat Sri Akaal, Assalamu Alaikum, Namaste, and welcome. You are listening to the fifth show of A Woman's World. My name is Purvi Shah, and I'm excited to bring you a show about women's dreams and challenges facing our community. Though a majority of our world and leaders in our communities and homes, women's voices are often unheard. This show aims to change that. Each week, we will delve into a new story of women making dreams come true. We hope to tap new experiences and create a ground for dialogue and change. As a poet and changemaker myself, I hope to help create this ground. You can read more about my work and writing, including my book of poetry, Terrain Tracks, at my website, purvipoets.net. That's www.purvipoets.net, or follow me on Twitter at purvipoets. Our prior shows have focused on sexual violence, dance, improv, and innovative community publishing. Today, I'm super excited to have you all with me as I speak with Luna Ranjith, a first-generation immigrant from Nepal who co-founded the community organization Adhikar and currently serves as its director. Welcome, Luna, to A Woman's World.
Thank you very much, Purvi.
So, what sparked you to be a community activist?
Some of it started very, very early. My parents are political activists in Nepal, so I saw it growing up.
So it was like part of your blood.
Yeah,
you just had it around you.
Exactly.
So did you feel like you had other choices? Were you like, no, I'm going to go and...
I didn't think I was going to be in this profession. I mean, it was going to be something like, I'm getting to do it as a paid job now.
But this is amazing.
Parents didn't do it as a paid job. So I never thought of it as a profession, but it was just something I was always going to do as a part of my life. And that changed after I came to US for college and was exposed to this opportunity. And after college, I went to DC to work at New Voices Fellowship Program, and that's where we met. And so I got to see people working as change makers, as community activists, organizers, bringing art into activism, like addressing the problems in the community in many different ways. And that made me want to be part of that as well and got me involved. And, you know, Adhikar was started 8 years ago, almost 8 years ago.
That's amazing. Congratulations. I definitely want to talk about that and Adhikar's founding. And I know you're one of the co-founders, but can you talk a little bit about the New Voices Fellowship and what that program is? Because it sounds like it was a really important part of your journey in deciding to be an activist here.
So New Voices Fellowship was a Ford Foundation funded program that supported people wanting to start a career in the social justice field and by providing like funds, salary, and a support network, as well as like mentorship. And through that program, I got to meet these social change makers from around the U.S. working in a lot of different issues. And that sort of opened my eyes to what was happening in the U.S. Because prior to that, my experience had been in South Asia. And I thought of myself as going back to South Asia to work there. But working at New Voices sort of changed my perspective on how I could be involved in community change work where I was located. Because I wanted to be doing something more hands-on.
That's amazing. I mean, I think it, just to have that crossroads where you had envisioned your life going back home and then working there, and then just to realize that actually you could do the change work was important here. And I think the other piece of that is just that understanding that you know, social justice leaders need mentorship and development too, and that it's not just, you know, a corporation where you need to develop people and leaders, you know?
I think mentorship was a very important part of New Voices Fellowship, and because I was exposed to it so early into my career, that I have also adopted that principle into, and I'm seeking out mentors for myself as well as serving as a mentor to younger people who are coming into this field as well.
Tell me about that. I thought, how do you feel like you can serve as a mentor to others in terms of the groundbreaking work that you've done?
I think it's mostly in like, I am not mentoring anyone formally, but it's more of like being available as a sounding board, being as like someone who can provide feedback and where people want to go with their careers and the choices they're making. And also at Adhikar, we've really made a concerted effort to provide opportunities for young college graduates to come and learn about social justice. And we've tried to make them paid work as much as possible as well.
That's so
that, you know, it's available to people who may not come from resources as well.
So tell me a little bit about Adhikar. You've mentioned it a couple of times, and we know Adhikar is now 8 years old. What is it?
Well, Adhikar is really like a big part of my life now and has been for the last 8 years. Adhikar is the only social justice organization in the U.S. that's focusing on making the Nepali-speaking community stronger, serving the needs of the community, making sure the community's voices are heard at the decision-making levels. So we are a community center. We're located in Woodside, Queens, and where almost 1,000 people come in every year for various programs. We have regular English classes, trainings, workshop, but it's also the only physical space where all Nepalis can come in and celebrate festivals, New Year, come to meet friends, just sometimes just hang out and read newspapers. But it's also where we come together and then discuss policy issues, from whether it's about domestic worker organizing or like more recently it's immigration reform and what it means. And so it's sort of a one-stop shop for everything for the community, with the community.
That's amazing. I definitely want to talk about some of the policy work you're doing, especially around immigration reform, which is such an important issue right now. But, you know, what struck me in what you're saying is that it seems like it serves as a home away from home for a lot of people.
Definitely.
Which is really an amazing community contribution. But so tell us, how did you come upon the name Adhikar? What does it mean and why did you choose that name?
So Adhikar means rights in Nepali as well as a bunch of South Asian languages. And we chose the name because we wanted it to be about rights. Like, while the community was new and had a lot of problems, we always looked at it from a rights-based perspective. We are thinking about it's not a charity, it's not just a social organization for fun. It's a social organization for fun also, but we're doing it from a rights-based perspective. And so we are consciously thinking about like promoting the marginalized voices as a community, like getting our voices heard because we're very underrepresented, but also thinking about the marginalized voices within our community as well. So our focus has been on women, young people, like making sure like there's different ethnicities are represented within our community as well.
That sounds amazing. I mean, I'd love to hear more on that. Like, how big is the Nepali American community in this country? And then, you know, in terms of when you talk about women and ethnic groups within that population, what are they and what are some of the challenges?
So the Nepali community in the U.S. Is very underrepresented, even in the data level. So the census says around 60,000. We estimate it to be at least 2 to 3 times as much. Like in New York, the census says New York City has a little over 6,000 of us. But we estimate it to be closer to 30,000-40,000.
Wow. Because you see so many people come in and you think there must be.
Right, definitely. Like 6,000 must have actually come through Adhikar at one point or another. So there's definitely much more of the community. And also, like, the way we have defined our community has been as a Nepali speaking community.
Yes.
So that includes Tibetan refugees who have come from Nepal, Bhutanese refugees, people from North India as well. And so that community is definitely much larger, and the census would not have captured that data.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for explaining that, Luna, because I know that you've always talked about Adhikar being a Nepali-speaking constituency and organization, and that really helps to make it clear that you have refugees from Bhutan or Tibet or also North Indians who are also Nepali-speaking. I mean, what are those different migration histories like, and how do they affect some of the issues facing the community?
There have been different migration histories, saying, like, you know, there are some who are more like stereotypically South Asian migration or more recent South Asian migration of professionals coming here for further studies or with jobs and settling here. And but that was very small population. There's the more recent waves have been of people looking for some security and stability away from the war that was happening in Nepal and the economic crisis that happened because of the war. People were have come as economic migrants or people have come as asylees, refugees. And then we have the refugee population from Bhutan and Tibet who have been living, had been living in refugee camps in Nepal but are now here. And the services and the resources that are needed for the populations are different. And then because there's also so many different immigration status now. Like, you know, so about a fourth of our population is undocumented and need different resources or are eligible for very few things. And whereas for refugees and asylees, there are more support structures in place. I mean, not all the things they need, but at least there are more support structures in place. And so the things and the services, the referral process, all of that has been like developed as the community has grown. And so we've really had to understand the whole, like, the lay of land about the benefit system and who's eligible for what and within what time period and all of that. So it adds a lot more work on Adhikar staff.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes navigating the government is a maze regardless of what you're trying to do. So it's kudos to you for making that happen for folks. I'd love to hear a little bit more. You talked about you estimate that maybe a quarter of your constituents are undocumented. I'd love to hear, especially since immigration reform is such a core issue right now in the U.S., you know, I mean, what does it mean to be undocumented? You know, how did folks come here? For what reasons? In terms of the constituents you work with? And then, you know, what are some of the things that you believe immigration reform can achieve for our community?
So within the Nepali-speaking community, most of the people who are undocumented came here as on a tourist visa or some other form of temporary visa and overstayed the visa and either were not eligible to adjust their status or did not get good information on time to be able to adjust their status. And so as a result, they're undocumented now. But recently, we've also seen a rise in the number of people who are being smuggled through the Mexico borders as well. We would get calls from lawyers in Texas who are representing people who are apprehended at the border while they were trying to cross over. And what we've heard is like they've spent thousands of dollars and been like transported from one country to another. And then finally in Mexico, they cross the deserts and try to get into U.S. On foot.
That seems like such a risk to take. I mean, why do people take those kind of risks, you know, and to bear this, like, you know, kind of context of being moved from one country to another? I mean, I imagine they're using up all of their savings, you know. Why do they do it?
Or loans. Actually, a lot of people take loans. Mm. And so partly it's the American dream, like the myth of the American dream, that you come to U.S. and you pull yourself up from your bootstraps and you can do. And the other issue, the reality is that American dollars goes much further in Nepal. And in Nepal, there are very few opportunities for people. And so people are moving and looking for options elsewhere. And those who have almost nothing end up going to India, and then those who have a little more end up going as migrant workers to the Gulf countries or East Asia, and those who have a little more resources end up either in Europe or in the US. And so they're mostly, I mean, people who have come here have professional degrees as well, but because of their undocumented status, they have they've experienced downward mobility, and so are mostly doing low-wage jobs in the jobs that end up becoming very exploitative. The employers take advantage of their immigration status and not pay them or make them work for very little or threaten to get them reported to immigration. And so as a result, a lot of people who are working extremely long hours with no benefits and also constantly living in fear and living in the shadows. And so that's why we are getting actively involved in the immigration reform debate and saying that, like, these voices need to be heard. These are things that are important to the community. The immigration reform, if we can get it done in a real way, like where it is really humane, we will have thousands of people within the Nepali-speaking community, as well as millions of others, who will be able to get out of the shadows and live a fuller life.
So I definitely want to hear more about that, and also some of the work that you're doing in concretely in terms of immigration reform and policy debates. But right now, we're going to take a short commercial break, and you'll be right back with us on A Woman's World.